This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 3rd of June, 2022, and a very strong session in the equity market yesterday as we have this market sort of, well, I don't know what it's wanting to do here, but it's wanting to rally and just pretty much ignore the pressures from commodities and rising yields. Got some more thoughts on yields, which are more interesting globally than in the U.S. We have seen a pop back in U.S. yields, but the rise is pretty profound. Elsewhere, we've talked about resistance levels. You can call it the 13,000 area. That was the area of prior major support. It's also the 38.2% retracement of the big sell-off rally from the end of March high. Where could we go next if this is broken? You can take your Fibonacci's, or you can look at the, I would like to look at that 100-day moving average, which also coincides, at least at present, with the 61.8. So it's around 13,800. The 200-day is not on this chart on slide two, and because this is just the latest feature. Those are not 200 observations, but it is around 14,700, I believe, the 200-day moving average. But let's not get ahead of ourselves here. I just find it interesting. Of course, we had a very, very extended negative sentiment that's come tumbling off. Some of the latest sentiment readings are vastly improved. Markets squeezing a little bit higher here, but there's no real change in our longer term view here, even though for allowing some daylight in for this could continue short term.
No, I mean, taking over here, John, I think that we're just seeing a classic bear market rally, rebound, call it what you want. It's more than 5% from the lows. The question is whether we can go to 10% and call it a real bear market rebound. I think we will be flirting with 13,000 in the NASDAQ 100 today, unless we get some external news that that's our sentiment. But otherwise, I think we'll go up and test that level. And if we push through, I don't think the half retracement there at 13,380. I think that's likely. We saw a very strong broad-based rally yesterday, as you can see as well in our theme baskets. And if you look at, I think you have mentioned it for a couple of days now, that the VIX is coming down hard. I think the forward curve on the VIX is getting into a territory where typically, okay, that's a green light for equities to rally in the short term. There's a lot of risk is getting priced out of U.S. equity options. And then if we look more, and that was on slide three, by the way, sorry for maybe rushing a little bit. If I slow down. Slide four, we show the Chicago Fed adjusted financial condition index since 1995. It's in the last 3 or 4 weeks, this index has actually paused. So there was a rush, there was a very steep momentum building there from around the pivot point of the FOMC and the Fed around late November. And then it rallied until the last couple of weeks where it has slowed. And just around this zero level, I've drawn the average line, the red, where you can see financial conditions on average relative to the economic backdrop. And you can see we're in tight territory, sort of the levels we had during the euro-era crisis. And I have two things for you regarding this conversation. So one, you had this interview with Janet Yellen where she admits that she was wrong about inflation. One thing is just saying that you're wrong. That's fine. I can live with that. But she's part of a cohort or a group of policymakers that all have been wrong. All the models that the Fed has been wrong. I don't have a lot of confidence about this inflation coming back. To be honest, I think Steen and I have had a lengthy discussion about this also in a special edition podcast, I think a long time ago, that inflation and inflation dynamics are the biggest puzzle of modern economics. I don't think anyone really understands inflation and is able to predict it. So let's see where it goes from here. And I think the bigger question now is that, so China's coming online, they're trying to reopen the economy. That has got a lot of markets positive and sentiment have improved because of that. It could ease global supply constraints. That would be good, right, for inflation to come down. But at the other hand, Ole, you will talk about that. It has pushed up sentiment. It can push up sentiment and prices on key commodities and aggravate those prices, and that will go straight into inflation as well. So I'm not fully settled, John. I don't know where you are on this, whether China's reopening is actually a net positive or net negative for further inflationary pressures.
It's certainly going to see inflationary pressures, to my mind, going higher if that translates that stimulus to demand, especially for the key commodities where the supply and demand imbalance is so fine that they're and we're suffering from supply shortages. And to that note, although we had an important event yesterday and important market reaction in the oil market with this OPEC Plus meeting, where we talked about whether this story from the, I guess it was the Wall Street Journal, talking about Russia's consideration within the quota system being sort of tossed to the side. What did we actually see there yesterday? That wasn't quite as what it was built up to be. And we've seen the oil markets pushing back higher.
Indeed, John. What we ended up getting was another political compromise within the OPEC group, all designed to keep the group together, not sending Russia out of the room. So they agreed a 50% increase of their monthly production increases to more than 600,000 barrels for July and August. All well and good on paper, but obviously in reality, worth absolutely nothing. We are currently, OPEC Plus currently trailing their production targets by close to 2.5 million barrels a day, with around a million coming from within OPEC and the rest outside of OPEC. And this agreement is not going to help that at all, because looking at the table here on slide 8, you can see the increase from June to July. And what is obviously it's not funny. It's actually sad that that you add another nearly 200,000 barrels to Russia's quota for next month, when we know very well that that potentially could be 200 at least lower, or probably more than that. So I've circled Saudi Arabia and UAE. They are probably the only two countries with a decent amount of spare capacity available who can actually increase production by that amount. So net, the 600,000 plus barrels for July could end up being zero. And that's why the market is rallying. We saw a very strong response in some of the cracks yesterday. That's basically the margin that refineries make from refining oil into products. I put in the gasoline in the cracks, WTI crack spread in the bottom right corner. It hit a new, I believe it's a record high, $60 a barrel. And it just highlights this very, very strong demand for products, which and crude oil struggling to keep up with the demand from refineries. We see the same scenarios playing out here in Europe. And also on the day yesterday, we had the weekly inventory report from the US. And just look at the gasoline inventories hitting the lowest since 2017. Demand as well, that's Finnish motor gas supplied in the middle chart, is showing no signs of slowing down. We are just basically hovering along the five-year average at this stage. So it looks like the medicine, the two options we have available right now is either a price high enough to kill demand, or growth, a slowdown in growth that starts to reduce demand. So this is like, what do you say, stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, and you just drive by the petrol stations here in Denmark, and you're just seeing these prices that you never would have thought were conceivable within that, just a year ago, 18 plus krona per liter here, around $2.50 a liter, even more. All right. Then we had a very big movement in the industrial metal space with this huge rally in copper through the 200-day moving average. And you're pointing out the fibs here on slide 7. Was there any news prompt from this, or was this just a technical move based on positioning, or what's going on here?
I think it's the fundamental backdrop is, as Peter mentioned, is basically China reopening, and also what impact that may have on commodity prices, especially metals. So in addition to that, we have some unrest in Peru at some of the mines, which is obviously raising concerns about supply from one of the world's major suppliers. And the technical, that was the fundamental. And then the technical backdrop was quite clear on this chart. The 435 level, we tried to break that a couple of times. It's the 38.2 retracement of the sell-off we had between April and May. And during that sell-off, as you can see on the insert, again on slide 7 in the bottom right-hand corner, you saw the speculative interest go from a long to a net short position. So that break yesterday would most certainly have wiped out the last remaining short positions, or reversed the net short back to a net long. And I mean, if we can close above that 455 level, which is 61.8 retracement, that basically could indicate that this correction we have been through is over, and we are heading back towards the 480, the 480 to 490 area. And also just a reminder, as we've been highlighting recently, we've had a 25% correction in the industrial metals. We have not seen inventories pick up during this time, which we would have expected prices dropping off due to expectation for lower demand. That should increase inventories. They haven't. They have been going down. So we are in a precarious situation here if we really see a strong recovery in China.
All right. Sounds inflationary to me. And going back to our previous discussion on the financial conditions. So Peter, your chart there looking at the very long term. And I've emphasized a couple times this week, it's kind of interesting. We've seen this snapback in yields. And the U.S. has been one of the more modest snapbacks, especially relative to the cycle. So on slide five, I put in the 10-year swap rates for a number of major currencies. And I put in the vertical line there on May the 3rd, so the day before the FOMC meeting, because that was the time that at least the U.S. short yields and I think the long yields peaked out in the Treasury market a little bit later. But regardless, approximately around there, the U.S. yields peaked out because of the Fed pushing back against the idea of super hikes. And since then, we've seen the U.S. yields range trading. We've come back higher, but not as high as we were back then, whereas virtually everywhere else, at least for Europe, UK, Australia, Canada, and not least Switzerland, we've seen new highs for the cycle in yields. And on the right, I'm showing that financial conditions, and in this case, it's our risk indicator. So it's not just financial conditions. It's also a market sentiment and volatility. A number of indicators used to create this, or a number of indices and bits and pieces used to create this indicator have been strongly improving. So this combination of higher rates, normally dollar supportive, but it's not seeing a tightening of liquidity or a tightening of sentiment or pressure on sentiment. So the dollars is not doing particularly well on this. And that's Q today's employment data and the ISM services. I think it's an interesting test. Especially if these prove particularly strong, would a new surge in U.S. yields start to change this narrative and see a tightening on liquidity and some pressure on sentiment? Don't know. I think that's the open question. And how we finish the week looks key to me for the U.S. dollar, which has especially been in retreat versus the commodity currencies of the world and those that enjoy generally a strong growth outlook, like the Australian dollar, the Canadian dollar. You can see that on slide six in the overview, the Aussie and the CAD getting the strongest readings among G10 currencies on the FX board. So the which looks at trend evolution based on the short to medium term. And I put up an Aussie dollar chart where you can see we've bulled all the way up into some really key resistance around 72.50, 60 area. It is the sort of 50% retracement mark of the big sell-off from the April high. And also it is the location of the 200-day moving average and really a cluster of other moving averages as well. Sort of the last gasp of resistance, if you will. And an interesting, as we again, we're heading into the end of the week here and this key U.S. data. And then, of course, with global yields rising, as I indicated, two new highs for the cycle, the yen is under max pressure. With all of that pressure unable to be absorbed by the Japanese government bond market, it gets absorbed by the Japanese yen instead. By the way, I just want to mention, we did see the Fed Vice Chair Brainard out yesterday. Hawkish talk from her, and I believe it was Mester also out talking about 50 basis points for the next two meetings. She said there's no reason for her to see a case, was the actual language she used, for a September pause. The Fed not normally in the business of predicting rate moves more than a meeting or two out, but apparently perhaps because this narrative had developed and from other sources, she felt necessary to push back against that. We have the market pricing a 40 basis points into that September meeting. So 250s in a row, June and July, and 40 basis points priced for September at this point in time. So the Fed's still very much on track to continue tightening. But let's look at what we're looking at today in terms of equity market focus. Not much because, of course, it's a Friday, but we have next week a few more earnings reports rolling in. So what's your focus here?
Yeah, there's not a lot of things going on, actually. The next week is not something I'm looking forward to be honest. Look at the companies. It's very boring. But I've highlighted a few on slide nine. In blue. So the biggest one, of course, being Inditex, the Spanish fast fashion retailer. They've had troubles for years. Look at the 5-year chart there on right hand side of slide nine. We're down over a 5-year period. This, of course, is in price terms, so it doesn't include any dividends. But they've had problems. They have been extremely, extremely slow at their online presence. They have a target of 30% of revenue coming from online in 2024. I mean, just think about that number. It should be above 50. I think it's quite detrimental to this company that they're failing so blatantly. And then the latest the latest attack on the company, you can call it, is from Shein, this Chinese ultra fast, it's been called, fashion company. They're even faster than Inditex, and they have been utilizing TikTok in a very interesting way to get data and experience and insights on what is moving in fashion, and then turning that into production in a very few days and then ship it to customers. So I think that's the two major things to focus on Inditex. To what extent are they expanding online, and what is the how is competition from Shein impacting the business? And online is so important because 1.5% of their store network is in the US, pretty big consumer market. So if this company wants to take on the US, it has to be via online. But so that's the key one. And then we have Acciona Energia's Renovables. Was that wrong?
I'll leave it at that.
Okay, I'm horrible at that language. Anyway, that's it's a green transformation. It's a renewable energy company here in Europe. So watch that as well on Wednesday. And then DocuSign is a very popular technology stock in the US among retail investors. And we have Vail Resorts, which is a big company within traveling. Operating different types of resorts around the world, could be giving some good insights on demand from traveling. And then Neo, I think this is not an actual earnings release. Maybe it's a preliminary figure, but I suspect that this Neo report that we see in the Bloomberg terminal is just an update on deliveries for the previous months. We will have to see. And you're talking about CrowdStrike? Question mark.
Which reported yesterday?
Yeah, they reported yesterday. I haven't seen the earnings release. Did you see it?
It was strong. I just
know. No, yeah, it was strong. But that was also what we alluded to. All the cybersecurity stocks are just very strong. I focused actually on Lululemon because that was the one we highlighted in the podcast. And their results were very strong, and they're seeing a lot of demand. Actually, higher than their initial internal forecast for their new sneakers. This is really a company that is doing well. And on the supply side of things, they're saying that the air freight prices remain extremely stubbornly high, and oceanic shipping times are not improving at all.
So, to go back to CrowdStrike, really interesting. Regardless of the results, which were strong, it's this tug of war, as we've talked about before. The valuation got so incredibly extreme. Mm-hmm. So even as they continue to grow and their performance and profitability and even beat expectations, you're still looking at a stock price that might be half of whatever it was at the highest. So just interesting to see the reaction function around those equities as the company shoots the lights out in terms of performance, but is struggling with that previous built-in, almost bubbly valuation. Okay, let's go to the macro data we have for today. It is the macro data day of the month with both the employment report for May out of the U.S. and the ISM services. That's expected at 56.5, I believe it was. Now I'm forgetting what the number was. Doesn't matter. It's still very strong by historic standards, but a slight dip from the prior month. And I think it'll be interesting if that is, of course, stronger than expected. The whole narrative being that we're seeing more of a switch into services. A company like Amazon actually having overexpanded its warehouse space because that demand for physical goods due to less stimulus and due to a change in consumer behavior. So is this picking up even more into the services sector, or are all the high prices, gasoline, petrol, food prices, et cetera, slowing down consumption? I think it's a very key part of the narrative here. And then, of course, the jobs data itself, which comes up 90 minutes before the ISM services data point, expected at plus 320K for the month. That was after a strong plus 428K the prior month. Always watch out for the two-month revision. That was actually negative in April. We had a whole long string of positive revisions due to the difficulty in collecting data. But it's not just a non-farm payrolls. As always, it's a volatile number. Also looking at things like the participation rate and how that impacts the actual unemployment rate, which is expected to dip to that historic low of 3.5%, which we saw on a handful of months prior to the pandemic outbreak. But keep in mind that the participation rate is about 1% lower than it was back then. And then as well, average hourly earnings. This is where we've seen a little bit of steam coming out of the month-on-month readings. Does that change? We're expecting a 0.4 plus and a 5.2% on the year-on-year. I think to get sort of the energy flowing again here in this market, at least for those concerned on the inflation front, we need to see a big beat on the earnings more than the payrolls change, and then the ISM services shooting the lights out as well. So we'll see what happens there. We also have Fed Vice Chair Brainard out speaking again later. there's no change of tone from the Fed here. Yes, Ole, I hear you piping up.
Yeah, just a quick comment as well, John. We have the monthly UN FAO's food price index, the global food price index, out this morning. And we did see a small setback in the Bloomberg Commodity Agricultural Index last month. So we'll see if that can be replicated. But again, from obviously an inflationary perspective, that that number will probably attract some attention as well. So I'll tweet it out once the result is out. It should be out around 10 o'clock Central European time.
Great. And then next week, three big event risks to concentrate on: the Australian RBA, the consensus expectations for an odd 40 basis point rate hike that would take the rate to 75 basis points because they're lifting off from that 10 basis point area that took them with their latest rate hike to only 35 basis points. And then we have the ECB meeting, where the view is that they're gearing up for a July hike, not one at this meeting, but a tip off for a move in July. And the whole question being thrown around there on whether 50 basis points is eventually an option, given the latest CPI data out of Europe. And then on Friday, that May CPI data point from the US. We'll be talking more about that next week. All right, let's see how this session goes down. I think it's a very interesting one, given the data we have up, given where yields are trading, and given the sort of relaxed attitude about those yield rises. Let's see if this remains the case, or if we get some pushback here ahead of the weekend. We hope you have a good one, and we'll be back next Tuesday. By the way, we have a holiday here in Monday. Lucky us here in Denmark. We'll be back on Tuesday with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.